Please join me in prayer. May the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be pleasing unto you, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen.
Amen.
Please be seated. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made, and without him nothing was made that has been made. Now, if you're like me and you've spent a lot of your life growing up going to church services, or maybe you haven't spent a lot of your life going to church services, but you've been around church at Christmas time, you will have heard this passage maybe more than once already this season. My family and I were new to Newburgh, and so we've been trying to find a church that will suit everyone, which was really a little bit challenging when it was just me and my husband. Now that we have two children thrown into the mix, it's incredibly difficult to find something that makes everyone happy and meets everyone's needs. So we've been visiting a lot of different congregations. And through Advent, every single church I visited had this passage as their reading. Every single one, 4 weeks in a row. So I have, I guess, no excuse if I'm not prepared this morning, because I've heard enough sermons on this passage already during Advent. But one of the things that struck me as I was listening to all of these sermons is that nobody actually preaches the whole passage. There's something weird that happens in this passage, and I don't know if you noticed it as it was being read, but it starts out with this big sort of poetic language about this Word that was with God and was God. And then we get this kind of like insert, oh, and by the way, there was also this guy named John, and he went around, and then we go back to the Word, and then another sort of side about John. And it's kind of, in some ways, it's disconcerting, this break. And most people, it was interesting even looking at the way it would be printed out in different churches, they just edit out the parts about John the Baptist. Because, you know, kind of it breaks the flow of the passage. And it really does. In fact, you've got poetry when we're talking about this incarnate Word. And then it goes into prose when we talk about John. And then it goes back into poetry. And there's something interesting happening there. Now, by my training, I'm a literary scholar as well as a theologian and church historian. And when I see things like that, the literary scholar in me starts going, huh, why do that? I mean, if this is an inspired text and, you know, has some sort of like divine authority behind it, why would you do that, this sort of break between high poetry that gets us all wrapped up in the moment and then break into prose? And I think, as I've been wrestling with that question a little bit over the past few weeks, I think part of what might be going on here is that it's as if John's wanting to mark out something different, right? Whatever's going on with this incarnate Word, it's of a different order, a different form, a different way of being than anything we've seen before. It's not quite like Moses. It's not quite like all those other prophets who were good and important and bore witness to the light, but we're talking about something different here. And as I started to think about that, it made me start wondering about some of the other weird things John's doing in this opening prologue. We actually have sort of a giant remake in the text, which I always find remakes fascinating. You know, movie remakes, like, why do it? The original was so good. Why do we have to have another version? And that's kind of what John is giving us here, though. In fact, we start out with three very famous words, in the beginning. Now, if you're a faithful Jew, you would know these words and exactly what is supposed to come next. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth was without form and void, and darkness was on the face of the deep, and the Spirit of the Lord hovered over the face of the waters. We know this story. And so John starts exactly the same way. In the beginning was the Word. Oh, that wasn't what I was expecting to come next, but okay, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. So we have our first remake as a remake of Genesis, a new creation story going on here. But that's not the only remake John's going to give us. He's also giving us a remake of Exodus. And this, for those of us who are modern, Western, Gentile readers, is a little bit harder to maybe pick up on. But we have a remake of Exodus in a couple very subtle places. One is down in verse 14. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. Now, that word for dwelling, I love the word to dwell. It's a beautiful word, but the word is actually to tabernacle with us. And for a faithful Jewish reader, that would clue something, right? The tabernacle where we see the glory of God, well, that's all about Exodus. Because Exodus is where God not only frees his people from slavery in Egypt and leads them out into the desert, but then he gives them instructions on how to build the tabernacle so that his presence can be among his people and he can dwell with his people. So we have a remake of Exodus here. And Exodus, of course, is a really important document for the nation of Israel because it's this document that says, this is who you are. You were slaves, and now you are my people who I have freed for my purposes. And so John's remaking that document as well, saying, we've got a new Exodus going on here. And he then hits it again at the end when he talks about John the Baptist and likens him to Moses. Moses. Oh yeah, the great prophet, right? The one who led us out of Egypt. So we've got a remake of Genesis and a remake of Exodus. But those aren't the only ones. We also have a remake of Isaiah for Americans. We also have a remake of Isaiah. If you were paying attention to the Advent readings from the Hebrew Bible, you will have heard passages like that in chapter 9. For the people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. To them living in the land of darkness, a light has shined. We see that light and dark being played with throughout this passage. In him was life, and that life was the light of all people. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. So what we have in this passage is a remake of three really important documents: Genesis, the creation of the universe; Exodus, the creation of the nation of Israel; and Isaiah. Isaiah was a text written to the people in exile and after the exile. People who thought they had it together and then found out, guess what? Some things are not going the way they were supposed to. They were conquered in the north by the Assyrians, in the south by the Babylonians. They were taken off, the Judeans were taken off into exile, into Babylon. Finally, there was a return. But it wasn't quite like the old days. You know, it just wasn't the same. And you can see throughout the text of Isaiah the sense of like, have we really returned from exile? Like, we're back physically, but something isn't quite right. There's something isn't quite there yet. So text for people in exile. I think one of the reasons John decides to remake these three great texts in the prologue is because he's kind of cluing his readers in. Do you feel like you're in exile? Like, you've wandered far from home, you've been kicked out of the places where you belonged, or maybe you're back home, but it's not the way it was? Well, here's a story for you. Or maybe you once knew the power of God to liberate and to free and to empower. You once knew what it was like to see God's mighty hand, but now you find yourself wandering in the desert, and you're not quite sure where you're headed. Well, this is a text for you as well. And maybe you're a little bit world-weary. You've been watching the national conversations. You've seen that 5 Jews were stabbed at a Hanukkah party in New York just yesterday. You've seen what's going on with refugees around the world, with immigrants to this country, and you just feel tired, and you feel like, can't we just start over somehow? Just, I don't know, just blow it up and just start over somehow. Well, this text is offering us a new beginning for those of us who are world weary and just want to start again. And what's amazing is that this is for everyone. If you picked up on it, it talks about in 13, 14, children born not of natural descent, nor of human decision or a husband's will. You don't get in on this. You don't become a child of the light, as John puts it, because you were born into a certain tribe. It's not about your bloodline or your race. You don't get in on this because of your national identity or because of the will of man, because someone has come and conquered your people and made you a part of it. It's something else. It's open for everybody. It's open, in fact, we see in verse 12, to everyone who believes in his name. Now, this is really interesting. In the Greek here, the word, there's two different ways to talk about believing in Greek. One is to believe in, using the preposition in, and it means like to rest in something. The other is to believe into. It's got this sort of motion toward something. It's a very active image. And what's really fascinating is John never uses anything about belief as a noun. In the Gospel of John, to believe is always a verb, an action, and it's always to believe into, to make this motion toward something. So how do you get in on this? It's open for everyone, this new beginning, this new start, by believing into, by making this motion toward Jesus. It's as if John is saying, if you want your life to be shaped by the rhythms and patterns of Jesus, guess what? That's all it takes. You don't have to believe a particular set of doctrines exactly and have all your theological T's and I's sorted out. No, no. You believe into it. You make a motion toward Jesus. And you're in. Whoever wants to be with Jesus gets to be with Jesus in John. And that is revolutionary, because that's not the way any of our sort of systems typically work, right? You want to be in, you've got to pass my tests. You have to like prove to me you're thinking about things the same way I'm thinking about them. You have to prove to me that, you know, that you're in. Nah. For John, it's whoever wants to make that motion toward Jesus. Except there's also seems to be some people who are out, right? Because that's one of the things that actually bugs me about all the Johannine literature is there's this sense of like the children of the light, but then there's the children of the darkness. Which begs the question, well, okay, if this seems to be open to everyone, regardless of tribe and race and creed, you know, like, or background or, you know, national identity and that sort of stuff, well, then who's out, right? How do you become not a child of the light? And that's a difficult question. Like, how does that happen? A number of years ago, I was visiting a friend in Bellingham, Washington, and we were walking along some abandoned train tracks one night. And there was a tunnel. It was a really long tunnel, probably about 300 meters long. And it was on a curve. So that once you started to walk into the tunnel, you quickly bent such that you couldn't see the light behind you. And it was going to be a good 200 or so meters at least until you'd start to see the light at the other end of the tunnel. And he's like, hey, let's walk through the tunnel. It's an active train line. And I'm like, okay. I didn't want to sound scared, so I actually said, we're like, yeah, sure, let's do it. I'm totally game. Inside, I was saying, oh my gosh, I think this is a really bad idea. But I did it anyway. And I had never been in that sort of utter and complete darkness before. I remember walking from sleeper to sleeper, and my mind started to play tricks on me. It felt like the entire universe was starting to disappear. It was like everything outside that I knew was there. I knew there were walls to this tunnel. I knew there was ground underneath the sleepers. But it was like this infinite void was starting to open up around me. And I just had to find my way from one sleeper to the next sleeper and hope and pray that when I saw light at the end of that tunnel, it was the light of the opening and not the light of a freight train coming down the line. After that experience, I've always read these passages about people walking in darkness and wondered, how can you not recognize the light? I was desperate for it, desperate to get to the end of that tunnel and to have something to guide me. But John says that although the light was in the world, in verse 10, though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. He came to that which was his own, and his own did not receive him. How can we miss the light? I think there's two ways. One is maybe we don't feel far from home. Maybe we don't feel like we're in exile, or like we're wandering in the desert, or like we need a new beginning. Maybe we are really happy with ourselves, with the world the way it is, with the status quo. We don't know that we're in the dark. If you don't know you're in the dark, maybe it's easy to miss the light. I think there's another reason, though. I think the other is what's known as perceptual blindness. Some of you may have seen the YouTube video a few years ago that went around where there's like these two teams throwing the balls back and forth, and you're supposed to count how many times the team in white throws the ball. And people would be really proud of themselves. They'd count 15, they'd get the answer right, except then there's this like thing at the end where the psychologist steps on and says, good job, you counted right. But did you notice all the men that started out playing changed to women on the other team, and the colors of their shirts all changed from blue to green, and the color of the ceiling changed from red to blue. Oh, and did you see the guy in the ape suit moonwalking through the frame? Most people missed all of that. It's what's known as perceptual blindness. When your mind becomes focused on a particular set of stimuli, you start to black out everything else that's going on. You literally become blind to that which is around you. And I think if we read John carefully and we consider texts like Galatians, the Galatians reading we had today, and the Isaiah reading, we start to see the sort of perceptual blindness that can make us miss the light. In Galatians, Paul's writing to the church in Galatia because he actually has this, like, one of my favorite openings in all of New Testament literature. He usually starts out with these lovely sorts of greetings, but when he writes the Galatians, his first word is, I am amazed that you have so quickly wandered away from the truth. You know, no niceties, just, I am amazed that you have done this. Because what they had done is they had started to become really obsessed with keeping the law again. This sort of like, no, God is a disciplinarian. God is looking out to get us. And so we have to be sure that we're doing things right, because that's how you get in on what God is about. And you can see that what had happened in our reading from Galatians, they had missed what was going on because they were so focused on their assumption that God was a disciplinarian, that God was someone looking at the law to grab them, that they missed what he was doing, They didn't get that they could cry out, Abba, Father, that they had been made his children, not people who were being kept by some sort of legal guardian. And I think we see that in John 2. We see all the traditional language of light, logos, or reason, this God who is on high, who is powerful. And if we're looking for a God who is smoke and lights and drama, well, we might be really disappointed. Because what we see at the very end of our reading today is that no one has seen God at any time, but the one and only Son, who is himself God and has made him known, Jesus. If you're looking for a God who's going to come with lights and drama and smoke machines and I am here, people, you're going to miss it. You might miss the light. One of the wonderful things, I talked about belief as a motion toward. One of the wonderful things about this passage is that it encourages us that God has already made the first motion toward us in coming and dwelling among us and pitching his tent among us. So we're responding to that thing that is already set in motion in God's descent into the person of Jesus. Rolled himself up into a tiny ball of cells, allowed his entire world to be reduced to Mary's breast as he nursed. God already has made a huge motion toward us. And John's gospel says, if you feel like you are far from home, that you are in exile and you don't know where you belong, this is a story for you. If you feel like you once knew God's power and you are wandering and wondering what it would be like to be with that God again, well, this story is for you. And if you are world weary and want a new beginning, well, then this story of God coming to earth is for you. Amen. Amen.